Listen up, true crime fans.
There's a big murder trial underway.
Dateline is launching a new podcast with Andrea Canning.
Welcome to Dateline True Crime Weekly.
We'll cover breaking crime news around the country with the best reporters on the case, NBC News analysts, and Dateline producers on the ground.
Over. Break it down for us.
You'll get behind-the-scenes scoops from crime scenes to courtrooms.
So tell us what he said.
Listen to Dateline True Crime Weekly now and catch new episodes every Thursday.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
This episode of Oppo is brought to you in part by FreshBooks. Track your time, send beautiful invoices, get paid faster. FreshBooks is incredibly useful for small businesses and freelancers like me. Try it out with a free 30-day trial. Just go to freshbooks.com/oppo and enter OPPO in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/oppo and enter OPPO.
This holiday season, why not be generous to your future self? Open an online investing account with Wealthbar, then sit back and just watch your money grow. Wealthbar gives you access to the same investment strategies that millionaires use at fees that are less than a half of traditional investments. Wealthbar has a special offer for Oppo listeners. Open an account online today and get $100 towards growing your money. Visit wealthbar.com/CanadaLand.
From Canada Land, this is Oppo.
I'm Jen Gerson, and I'm about to retreat into my holiday Calgary cave where I will cook, use the Instapot, make gingerbread cookies, and knit.
And I'm Justin Ling, parked somewhere outside of Montreal in my car, and I'm going to spend the holidays talking to my family about next steps in terms of any possible run for the Conservative leadership. On this week's show, we finally talk about the final act of Andrew Scheer, one of the worst Conservative leaders of all time.
Oh, that's harsh.
I know, but it's true.
Then I talk briefly about Western alienation, and then we have some news.
There's some news.
News about the most important resignation in Canadian politics this week.
All that and nothing else.
This episode of Oppo is brought to you by FreshBooks. One of the biggest burdens of any freelancer is having more time in the day, week, or month to actually get more work done. It actually seems like the day-to-day tasks of having your own business take up more time than doing the business itself. And the work that you actually want to do gets put on the back burner, and that's just natural. This used to happen to me all the time. Accounting tasks are a massive time waster. They may not seem difficult, but they are so time-consuming. You have to sort through boxes of receipts and search for old PDFs of your old invoices and look at your massive spreadsheet of all your contracts and what you earned and your tax. It is just such a nonsense waste of time. Surely in the year 2019 we can figure out something better. Well, we have. FreshBooks accounting software saves up to 192 hours a year because it makes taking care of your books that much easier. That's 192 hours you can spend on networking, sales calls, training, filing access to information requests, annoying government bureaucrats, or really anything you didn't have time for otherwise. The beauty of FreshBooks is that there's really no learning curve, so you can just jump right in and start organizing your books in a flash. It's also the perfect time of year to start thinking about tax season. I mean, any time of year is the perfect time of year to start thinking about tax season. So start moving your spreadsheets to FreshBooks now, and you'll save even more time when you have to file your taxes. And if that's not incentive enough, we're offering a free 30-day trial of FreshBooks for all of our listeners. Just go to FreshBooks.com/Oppo and enter OPPO in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/OPPO and enter Oppo in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And now for the second and last edition of the shortest-lived Oppo segment ever, the Andrew Scheer Leadership Death Watch. So, Jen, as you may already be aware, Andrew Scheer tendered his resignation as leader of the Conservative Party of Canada last Thursday, surprising nobody that he was leaving, surprising everyone that he did so quite so suddenly after trying to mount a fulsome bid to keep his job.
Were you kind of surprised when you heard this news?
Yeah, I mean, of course, last week's show, I made the prediction that he was going to stay on until the new year. He did this just to fuck with me. I swear to God, Andrew Scheer listens to this show and resigned just to spite me.
You know, we have to have a conversation, Justin, about your predictive qualities in politics.
Hey, listen, I've always said I'm very good at describing what has already happened. I'm not so good at describing what's about to happen.
You're really terrible at this. This is like your one fatal flaw, and it's very amusing for me.
I say what should happen, not what's going to happen.
Okay, so let's talk about what did happen.
Right, so it emerged basically Thursday late morning that Andrew Scheer was gonzo. He announced it at a caucus meeting, and then suddenly it was breaking all over the place. But there was conflicting reports about why exactly he left. In the early hour after it happened, we saw some reports that John Baird's review of the last campaign had landed on Andrew Scheer's desk, and that was the reason, only to get contradicted by John Baird himself, who said, I haven't even written the damn thing yet, so no, that's not why. And then this report trickles out that Andrew Scheer was taking party money to put his kids in private school.
And then it came out that, in fact, he wasn't really just taking party money to put his kids in private school. In fact, the party had agreed in some capacity to pay the difference in the private school tuition between his kids' school in Regina and the kids' school in Ottawa, and that this was part of moving expenses and a compensation package.
But then it came out that, yes, they were paying the differential between the two tuitions, but that the Conservative Fund didn't know anything about it. Of course, the Conservative Fund is the organization that manages the money and is still chaired by Stephen Harper and kind of run by the Harperites, and they were none too happy that Andrew Scheer was using party money for his kids' schooling.
Yeah, here's where I think we need to add just a few heaping piles of salt onto this, because, you know, the Conservative Fund is not like some petty cash box that Andrew Scheer can just reach into and grab some cash out, running away. That's not how any of this shit works. It's very, very common for parties to top up leaders' salaries and compensations and all sorts of things. I mean, a lot of parties do this kind of secretly. They're not necessarily super transparent about it, but it's not uncommon for them to do this. And also, you know, for Scheer to have gotten these expenses written off, it's not like he can write himself a check. He would have needed signers at senior levels within the party in order to sign this off. So what I think probably happened here, and this is just speculation on my part, is that the board sort of signed off on some broad, relatively vaguely stipulated compensation package to Andrew Scheer, and then Scheer sort of negotiated to have those tuition expenses as part of that broader compensation package, which might explain why some of the senior members of the party maybe weren't aware of the specifics, because they wouldn't be aware of the specifics. They wouldn't be aware of the line items.
My understanding, that's exactly what happened. The board approved a line item for basically moving expenses that was supposed to cover everything from his transition, because as I understand it, his kids stayed behind at Saskatchewan while he was speaker, and that part of him becoming a leader meant that the whole family moved up to Ottawa into Stornoway, the official opposition residence. And the director of the Conservative Party, not the fund, approved this basically the subsidy for his kids' tuition at private school, but the board never knew about that one particular spending item, and apparently they were quite upset. You saw unnamed sources from the Conservative Fund basically outraged in the media, and from my understanding, that wasn't just any random person. That was
either Stephen Harper himself as the unnamed source or someone very close to Stephen Harper that, you know, you don't speak for Stephen Harper's cabal of conservatives without Stephen Harper knowing about it. So there's some interesting palace intrigue here.
Okay, but this anger is pretty freaking convenient as well. You know, it sounds to me like what actually happened is that someone at the senior levels of the party decided that Scheer had to go, and this was just going to be the cleanest way to take him out. And by releasing this and forcing a kind of outrage among the Conservative Party's higher-ups that this was just going to be the easiest way to basically slice him off.
But not so. That's not what happened. So actually, unfortunately, I think McLean's got a little bit scooped on this, but Stephen Marr in McLean's wrote, you know, in the hours after this all broke, that he had been inquiring to the Conservative Fund about these payments in the week before this came out.
Yeah, and that means somebody leaked it to him.
Yeah.
Whoever tipped Marr off saw this as an opportunity to push Scheer out. I'm a little bit skeptical about the degree of outrage here. I think it's all a little bit convenient to get incredibly angry at Scheer. I mean, Scheer actually didn't do anything wrong if the executive director signed off on these specific expenses.
And so reports started coming out Friday that executive director of the Conservative Party, Dustin Van Vogt, is also on the way out, seemingly pushed, at least in some small part, because I think he approved the tuition expenses for those private schools.
Worth pointing out there that, you know, that's the ostensible reason.
Yeah, he's also been there. He's been there for a number of years now. I mean, executive directors of parties don't tend to last that long. So, I mean, he had a good 5-year run or so. So, eh, not bad.
Ultimately, the Conservative Party is a private club, and how they manage their own expenses internally is up to them. Any party has the choice to, you know, direct its expenses as it sees fit. And the only people who really have a right to be angry about this are potentially Conservative Party donors, because it's their money, right, to their organization. This isn't taxpayer money. So that is the thing, is that whether or not the donors themselves are pissed off about this is going to be the real test.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't want to, you know, keep kicking a guy when he's down. You know, I think Andrew Scheer was an absolutely disastrously incompetent leader of the Conservative Party.
But the actual scandal here is a bit bullshit, is what I'm saying.
I don't think Andrew Scheer is a necessarily bad politician. I'm fine with him being a member of Parliament. I think he's a perfectly nice guy. But I do think, you know, somebody at the party at some level should have said, why the hell are his kids going to private school anyway?
It's a brand and an optics problems for sure.
Well, and there's a very good public school not far from Stornoway. And, you know, you kind of have to get to the question of, you know, during the campaign, it came up that Andrew Scheer had kind of fervently defended not just private schools, but also homeschooling with his school choice tax credit, which gets you back into the question of, you know, Andrew Scheer seems so fundamentally uncomfortable with, you know, things like public education and sex ed. It seems like another chapter in the book entitled Andrew Scheer doesn't seem super comfortable with the government he wants to run. And that's what I keep coming back to is, you know, Andrew Scheer, you know, doesn't seem comfortable with abortion services. He doesn't seem comfortable with, you know, most gay issues. He doesn't seem comfortable with sex ed. At a certain point, why did he want to be the fucking prime minister? I'm not sure I get it. And there is famously a Catholic high school system in Ontario that is public and still has to, you know, adhere to the sex ed curriculum. So I don't know. It's a little curious that he wasn't even comfortable with sending his kids to the Catholic
school.
You
know, if you feel the need to separate your kids from public school because those public schools are too worldly for you, you know, that's fine. You can make that personal decision for yourself and your kids, but it does, you know, raise that squeaky factor for like, okay, well, why are you trying to be the head of that worldly system? Now, I think it's interesting to talk about his legacy as a leader and then go into talk about, you know, his potential replacement, because I think that the Conservatives are now incredibly vulnerable in ways that I'm not sure that the people who ousted Andrew Scheer have quite wrapped their head around, but I don't know. My predictive capacities are a little better than yours, but not that much better.
I actually think kind of the opposite. I think the Conservatives are now in a perfect spot. I mean, if Andrew Scheer had clung on till April and got ousted then, or had gotten sort of a half-assed mandate from the membership, which was quite likely, they would be in a much worse spot. I mean, it would have been a fundamentally disgruntled, unhappy party. The people who had tried to put the knives in his back would have been on the outs. Andrew Scheer would have not have had an organizational capacity to sort of run the next campaign. He would have had to rely on his same group of sycophants to keep things together, and the party would have just been not enthused going into the next campaign, which could come, you know, at any point in time. Now, at least they have, you know, the benefit of time to actually go and pick a leader. I think if they're smart, they would make the race short as humanly possible, because they cannot afford to have like another year and a half long leadership race that brings in every Yahoo and whack job.
They need to have someone installed like in the next 3 to 6 months at a max.
I don't think that's actually feasible under their constitution. We'll see. I mean, they have to have their convention in April. So I doubt that they can get a vote together by then, but if they would be very smart to do so. But if not, I think it'll probably be, you know, sometime in the fall, maybe later than that. But they need to put a rush on it, and they need to make sure that only serious candidates are applying. They can't afford to have another sort of like who's who of the conservative backbenches running to be leader of this party. It led to such a chaotic race last time that they went with Andrew Scheer because he seemed like the least offensive choice.
Well, and that's also why you're seeing all of a sudden everybody talking about Ron Ambrose, Ron Ambrose, Ron Ambrose, right? There is a vested interest among anybody established within the party to create such a clear and obvious front runner that nobody will think to come up and challenge her, right?
Yeah.
Peter McKay and Erin O'Toole have announced that they are going to run, or they're preparing to run. You're hearing Christy Clark, but I mean, it does seem to be like the out of the gate favorite is Ambrose.
Many people we've been touting Christy Clark's name in the last couple days. I think it was Elise Mills, you know, conservative supporter strategist pundit, pointed out that Christy Clark is likely a member of the Federal Liberal Party. You know, there's no guarantee she's even an actual conservative.
I mean, honestly.
That kind of disqualifies her, no?
Not necessarily. I mean, look, if the membership says that they're behind her, they're behind her.
If she's not a member of the fucking party, she's not going to run to lead it.
I mean, Ralph Klein used to be a federal liberal before he became a conservative premier.
Either way, yeah, I think all these names are very valid, but I think the list should get cut off at a certain point. You know, you're hearing Rod Phillips in Ontario talk about leaving the provincial PCs to run for the federal party. That would be insane. You're hearing Michael Chong's talking about running again. Just don't. Like, really, the list should be a narrow one.
This shouldn't be a leadership race. This should actually be like an appointment. It's actually what it should be.
I think you have a race between a couple people. What you need is the money, right? I mean, leadership races are a great way to raise money and excitement.
The risk for the Conservatives right now is that they will lose control over their leadership process, and that you will have some kind of absolute wingnut come up the middle. And that is my concern, especially after we just saw Boris Johnson absurdly win. You have people like Bojo winning, people like Trump winning. It would be very easy to convince the conservative base that the answer is to double down on crazy right-wing populism.
Yeah, I don't think there's appetite for it, but I mean, just even having that person in the race is enough to sort of knock you on your side in a big way. Like, you can't have another Kelly Leach running this time.
No.
You can't have a Maxime Bernier running this time. I mean, you had that big kind of ideological free-for-all, and the crazy people lost. I mean, to the Conservative Party's credit, if they were going to win a race where, you know, an anti-immigrant or an anti-transgender or anti-social progress candidate were going to win, it would have been the last race, and they didn't. So I think that's a ringing endorsement of the modern Conservative Party.
So one of us has a pretty good track record of predicting things, and the other one doesn't. Guaranteed that we're going to have some absolutely batshit figure come out of the People's Party of Canada who we've never heard of and run up the middle. There you go.
No, but quite legitimately, I mean, as I understand it, the directorship of the Conservative Party is going to have a fair bit of leeway to set the conditions on who can run. Usually the levers they've used in the past have been, you know, how many signatures can you get and how much money can you put up front. I think they actually should take a cue from the Conservative Party of the UK and kind of set the standard, at least for this race, that every candidate needs to have the endorsement of X number of members of the Conservative caucus.
Yeah, I think that that's a brilliant idea.
I think that would be a really wise way to avoid having all of these folks kind of meander into the race and diffuse attention from who should be the actual candidate.
But wouldn't that require a change to the Constitution in order to do that?
I don't think so. But, the candidates that are on the table right now, if it is Ron Ambrose, if it is Peter McKay, maybe someone convinces James Moore that he has to do it. There's a couple of other names, you know, maybe Pierre Poilievre. I think you absolutely need a Quebecer in the race. And to that end, Gérard Deltel, I think, is the odds-on favorite to kind of lead the Conservative caucus in that race. Those are all really good names. Like, that is an embarrassment of riches of very, very competent candidates from, you know, different ends of the Conservative Party with, I think, some pretty good ideas on the table. And you've already heard a couple of them come out and say, yeah, if I ran, I'd go march in a pride parade, and I am not going to talk about abortion. In fact, I'm pro-choice. Not that those are necessarily a litmus test for being a leader of the Conservative Party, but I think it does recognize that if you want to lead a modern party, you got to talk to modern people. And I think that is smart that you already are seeing candidates recognize that rather than do the, you know, wring your hands until they're just bones and blood like Andrew Scheer did.
For the sake of the Conservative Party and for democracy in Canada as a whole, I hope that you're quite right. I hope it's one of these figures who emerges and they just install them very quickly. For the sake of democracy in Canada, I hope that this is as anti-democratic as humanly possible.
Even if it excludes me from running.
Hey, I wouldn't rule you out.
This episode of Oppo is also brought to you by Audible. Audible has the best audiobook performances, the largest library, and the most exclusive content curated by and for Canadians. When you start your 30-day trial with Audible, your first book is free. So why not give a listen to Common Ground by Justin Trudeau? You can turn into this exclusive audiobook to hear the current Prime Minister talk about his life in the public eye. In the book, Justin Trudeau reveals how the events of his life have influenced him and formed the ideals that drive him today. He explores, with candor and empathy, the difficulty of his parents' marriage and the effect it had on a small boy and the close relationship with a father whose exacting standards were second only to his love for his sons. The book is an interesting look behind Justin Trudeau's life, and maybe best of
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Vol, the foreword is read by the author. Okay, let's say you don't even like Justin Trudeau. Well, you know what? The upside is that it's narrated by Colm Feore, the noted actor who, yes, played Justin Trudeau's father in the television film Trudeau, but is also in so many other things. Of course, he was in Bon Cop, Bad Cop, everyone's favorite Quebecois film, Chronicles of Riddick, he was on 24, he was on House of Cards. There's no reason not to listen to Justin Trudeau's autobiography as narrated by Colm Feore. And you can get that on Audible for free when you start your 30-day trial. You can learn more at audible.ca/Canada. That's audible.ca/CANADA.
And now it's time for Jen Gerson's Western. And by that, I mean Alberta, not necessarily Saskatchewan, not Manitoba and BC, definitely not BC, but maybe Saskatchewan, but we'll see. Alienation Corner.
I like that the name's getting longer and longer every episode.
So a couple of things are happening in the most aggrieved corner of the country. The first is that the government of Alberta debuted its energy war room known as the Canadian Energy Centre.
We are going to begin systematically through the Canadian Energy Centre to respond to a highly coordinated and largely foreign-funded campaign to landlock Canada's responsibly produced resources.
The centre will take a fact-based approach, counteracting myths and lies being spread about our province and about our energy sector.
Where do you even begin with this one? I don't necessarily have a problem with the government of Alberta taking a really aggressive strategy to counter misconceptions or myths or just outright factual falsehoods about the oil sands. That's just basic communications to me. Any government would do that. Calling it a war room is kind of dumb. Frankly, it's misguided. It just sort of sets you up to be on an adversarial and aggressive path against the people you actually need to win over. But fine, that I don't have a problem with. What's really interesting to me is the way that they've set this up. Because, you know, when the Canadian Energy Centre was launched, the minister in charge, Sonia Savage, told reporters that it would be open for requests under the Alberta's Freedom of Information and Privacy Act, which means that people could FOIP what was going on there, as they would be able to do with any other government arm or agency. However, in a follow-up statement, the press secretary to the premier said, "Nope, not the case. The CEC's internal operations are not subject to FOIP, as this would provide a tactical and or strategic advantage to the very foreign-funded special interests the CEC is looking to counter." I mean, it's almost like a Lord of the Rings-style fantasy world that they have established in their heads.
Alberta has always been at war with Greenpeace.
I mean, it's kind of amazing that the world that they live in, they think that, like, hey, if we do some FOIPs to find out exactly what you're doing with taxpayer money, you know, you might be giving a strategic advantage to the foreign-funded radical Greenpeace.
It's always a pretty good sign of where a government's doing bad things based on what they're not allowing you to file ATIPs for.
That's pretty much it.
This is, I think, borderline corruption. Like, this is bad. I mean, it's an abuse of taxpayer money. It's an assault, honestly, on free political speech. I mean, you can bill this as foreign funding of environmental groups all you want, but at the end of the day, it's not targeting foreign groups. It's targeting domestic groups who you allege are only making the speech they're making because they're getting foreign money, which is a fundamentally flawed premise.
Well, this has been completely debunked. This is the problem. So they're also holding an entire inquiry, and we talked about this on OPPO before, about like almost half the funds of this inquiry are going to a law firm that happens to have a partner who's the son of the blah, 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 blah. There's all kinds of issues around that. But like the whole idea that the only reason why the oil sands are being attacked is because of these foreign-funded radicals is bullshit. That has been totally debunked. I mean, again, we've talked about this in OPPO in the past. There is some legitimacy to the claim that, you know, there was some foreign money going to some NGOs and environmental groups to help them do what they would have been doing anyway, which is attacking the oil sands for reasons that are totally understandable and explicable. And most of that money and most of that whole strategy completely dried up after 2015 when the Notley government introduced its own sustainable climate action plan, a very progressive one.
Yeah.
The whole thing just died down shortly after that. They couldn't get funding for it anymore because it's like, yeah, well, you know, we came to a compromise on this.
That's right.
So, like, it's shadow boxing is all that they want to do at this point.
It's trying to direct anger. I mean, like, Greenpeace doesn't set the point of crude, right? Like, sure, Greenpeace may have had a role to play in the Sierra Club and all the others, may have had a role to play in building a public consensus against multiple pipeline projects, but also, public consensus isn't really what killed these pipeline projects. I mean, fundamentally, the price of oil did.
A lot of things did. But the thing that I would say also is there's nothing wrong with a government, you know, countering particular, quote unquote, attacks on the oil sands if those attacks are inaccurate, wrong, or misleading. Like, you know, the previous Notley government did that too. All Alberta governments have said, well, no, this isn't accurate. And if your idea of a war room is like writing Canadian Geographic a letter spelling out what they got wrong in their story, I have no problem with that. That's an appropriate thing for the government to do, and that is not an attack on free speech.
You don't need a war room to do that.
Yeah, no, you just need a communications department. So, I mean, if this is sort of a euphemistically named communication strategy, I really have not so much a problem with it. But the fact that they are not allowing FOIPs, it should be setting off huge red flags for everybody, as it is for me.
FOI the hell out of all of the other departments in hopes of getting their emails. That's what I'll tell all the Alberta reporters out there.
Yeah, Treasury or something like that, right? And then, of course, there have been some reports that suggest that Jason Kenney's popularity is in decline. This is amid campaigns by a lot of the labor groups out here to fight back against some of the cuts that are going to be taking place to nurses and doctors and healthcare, education, those sorts of things. So his cuts, predictably, are fairly unpopular. The degree to which his popularity has plummeted, I think, is a matter of some dispute, depending on which polling firm you're going to pay attention to. But, I mean, it does appear to be moving the needle, which I'm sure Kenny predicted, which is why he's getting all these cuts done in year one of his term.
Yeah, I mean, based on one of the most recent polls, he's one of the least popular premiers in the country. Also, not surprising for a first-term premier who's making some pretty deep cuts. I mean, that kind of happens to all premiers who decide to hack and slash health and education funding. I do suspect that, you know, it's a little too early for reports of his death.
Oh, yeah.
He has 3 years to start spending again and win back his constituency.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. I mean, this is a blip for him and a fairly predictable one, and one that I'm sure that he sort of budgeted for. I mean, but it's not just the cuts, though. It's the cuts. It's the fact that, you know, all of these aggressive moves and belligerent, you know, fist shaking doesn't appear to be bringing business back. The economy doesn't appear to be improving.
Oh, who could have foreseen that?
Literally everybody.
Whom could have predicted that yelling at the economy doesn't make
it exactly
better?
Yeah, exactly. And then also, you know, you get this weird corrupt shit that people got so sick of with the old PCs, because, of course, it's all the same old boys around Jason Kenney as used to be around the old PC guys. So, you know, you have firing of the elections commissioner, and you have, you know, dodgy inquiry contracts going to friends of the government, and then you have weird stuff with the Canadian Energy Center. And like, what are you doing? What exactly are you doing? Do we actually trust you to do any of this stuff? You've got, oh, then this one was really fun, sort of redirecting pension funds, teacher pension funds, into potentially oil and gas industry players who aren't going to give them the best return on their retirement funds. I mean, like, there's all kinds of just creepy, dodgy stuff going on behind the scenes that people are trying to cover up with saber rattling, and I think that it's not a good look.
New boss, same as the old boss.
This holiday season, why not be a little more generous to your future self? Wealth Bar makes great investing ridiculously easy. Open an RRSP or TFSA online, then sit back and watch your money grow. Seriously, you don't even have to change out of your festive jammies. This is one less thing that you'll have to shop for this season. With ETF portfolios and exclusive investments that were once available only to millionaires, Wealth Bar will pair you with the portfolio that will put you on track for your future goals. With demonstrated performance, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Literally. Wealth Bar manages and balances your portfolio for you, so your money stays on track effortlessly. And with fees that are less than half the cost of traditional investments, your money grows faster with Wealth Bar. Contribute to your Wealth Bar RRSP before the February 29th deadline, and you'll also be gifting yourself a bigger tax return. Right now, Wealth Bar has a special offer for Oppo listeners. Open an online account and get $100 towards growing your money. Start investing online in minutes at wealthbar.com/CanadaLand.
And now for a new segment I'd like to introduce to Oppo, the East Coast Alienation Corner, where I announce that I'm alienated from federal politics, and as such, I'm resigning from Oppo.
Da, da, da.
The big resignation news of this week is not Andrew Scheer's departure from the Conservative Party, but in fact, that I will not be returning to Oppo in the new year. So, cue the waterworks now.
I'm actually quite upset about this, Justin.
That's fair.
I mean, I thought that when we started Oppo that it was really going to be about us hating each other, but over time I've come to like you.
It turns out the real Oppo were the friends we made along the way.
So Justin, explain to us and our audience a little bit about why you're abandoning me to the masses.
It really goes down to the fact that I think I hate politics now. And I mean that quite genuinely.
Oppo broke you is what you're telling me.
It helped. Actually, Oppo is maybe one of the better outlets for my total frustration. You know, people have remarked on the show before that it sounds like we don't like what we cover. And I think with you, that's only half true. With me, it's increasingly 100% true. I'm increasingly turned off by the rat race, by, you know, politics as sport, which we've talked about before, Parliament Hill being an entertainment arena as opposed to a place where, you know, important things are supposed to get done. And it's bumming me out in such a way that I don't know that I want to be in it anymore.
It's funny because I came to this from the totally the opposite point of view, is that, you know, I came into journalism very much as a general assignment reporter. I did not have a specialization for many, many, many years. And, you know, then I happened to get a job at the National Post in 2012 in Alberta. And Alberta, by the way, at that point was like an absolute death zone for politics. It was not the place you went to for any kind of political journalism career. But in 2012, all of that changed because I got started my job at the National Post just as Alison Redford was elected. And then everything in this province got fucking wild. And I just got sucked into the political vortex and really found myself cottoning onto it and liking it and not expecting that to have happened at all. I never imagined myself to be a particularly political animal, and now I'm a bit of an addict, I guess. It's interesting because, you can kind of go one way or the other. You can either sort of just embrace it for its absurdity and its brilliant manic nutsoness and just roll with it. If you don't have any expectations for politics, it can never really disappoint you.
That's so funny. I sat down with Momala Kagak, who's the new MP for Nunavut, whose name I actually learned how to pronounce properly, thanks to her. And she said the exact same thing. I kind of said, you know, I've spoken to MPs over the years who have come to Parliament and have, like, eaten it up. And they love this. They love the cut and thrust. They love the heckling. This is, you know, their life's goal. And I've spoken to other MPs who said that after their first day on the job, they went to the bathroom and cried because it was one of the worst things they've ever experienced. And I asked her, I'm like, you know, what was your reaction? You've been here for exactly a week now. How have you dealt with it? And she kind of said, when you come here with no expectations, you can't be disappointed. And that actually hit me too. I'm like, that sucks. Like, that blows.
But you know what? I actually kind of feel the same way about life in journalism, and that's just kind of philosophically where I'm at.
Now we're just into nihilism.
It's a little bit closer to Buddhism as well. Like, I see a lot of people coming into, for example, journalism, thinking, like, I'm going to be a journalist, and I'm going to change the world with my work. And then they realize, you know, 5 years later that they've spent the last, almost all of their 20s, slogging it out on the cop desk or covering courts. And the job is not this world-changing vehicle for activism that they thought it was going to be, and they wind up getting horrendously burnt out and disillusioned. Where my philosophy on this has always been, you have to love the work for the sake of the work and not worry about, you know, the bigger picture, not worry so much about whether or not it's changing the world or not. Just do what you were put on this earth to do because you love it. And if you don't love the work in and of itself, then my God, get the fuck out. Like, go do something else with your life.
So you're totally right. So, you know, I arrived on Parliament Hill, you know, a fresh-faced, somewhat fresh-faced, somewhat already grizzled reporter in, you know, 2012, you know, in the heyday of the Harper majority. And, you know, I've been on Parliament Hill either full-time or part-time, you know, ever since then. This is now my third parliament, and it is getting worse. Like, first off, it's getting worse. You know, the amount of, you know, thoughtful, not even debate, because the House of Commons has always been a bit of a mess, but the amount of, like, thoughtful scrutiny and work that goes into bills and into major issues, I think we're losing it, you know, and I think the coverage has gotten worse with declining newsrooms and all this. I think the atmosphere on the Hill is worse than it was even in the Harper era. I don't think there's actually, you know, a thoughtful, reasoned, at least conversation about important issues in the way there was before. And in the last little while, I've taken kind of the Marie Kondo approach to journalism. It's, you know, is this bringing me joy / is this helping? And, you know, we had Jeff Bollingall on the show a couple weeks ago, and you heard me say to him a couple times, you know, I think you're actively hurting democracy. And it did kind of force me to look back and kind of go, well, wait, am I helping?
You are leaving the show with all good blessings and love, and just so our audience knows, we will be bringing in some other person, some other people, you'll see, in a couple of weeks, and we're going to hope that it works out.
They'll never replace me.
They'll never replace you, but we'll do our best. Actually, we've got people who are way better than Justin. Don't even worry about it. No.
I'm going to hide in the rafters and make ghost noises as they're trying to record the show.
Justin, what are you going to do next? Because if you go and start, like, a politics show with the CBC, I'm going to be fucking pissed.
Call me CBC.
I'm going to be angry.
No, I'm going to go off and do some other stuff. Like, I decided I'm going to try to take a little, like, maybe a half step back from kind of the day-to-day politics and just, you know, see if I can do, you know, commit more time to investigative stuff and see if I can kind of move the needle in a different way. And if it means me not having to, you know, follow the TikTok of the Conservative Party leadership race, then, you know what? Could be worse.
Meanwhile, I think this Conservative Leadership Party race is going to be hilariously interesting. And I cannot wait for it.
I'm going to watch it from maybe a sane distance.
That's fair. And also, maybe it's a little bit easier for me being in Calgary because everything in my life is not consumed by politics.
Yeah, and I'm still obsessed with journalism. Like, I have a book I have to finish. I'm working on a documentary series.
Yeah, you really got to get on that book, buddy.
It's coming along, and if my agent's listening, it's almost done, I swear to God.
Yeah, how many deadlines have you missed? Be honest.
All of them?
Fuck's sakes.
It'll be out in September. Look for it then.
All right, on your way out, here's what I would like to do, Justin. I would like to do this for you.
No.
The road is long.
Thank you. Can I regift this to somebody?
With many winding turns.
I'd like to be excluded from this narrative.
Who knows where? Who knows where?
Can I quit before the credits up?
But I am strong. Strong enough to carry him. Yeah.
Can we go straight to the bridge?
Heavy. He's my brother.
Okay, that's it. Great. Cool. Song over. That was the whole song.
Well, that's it for Oppo this year. We will be back in January. Slightly new people, slightly new format. We hope that you stay with us. And in the meantime, please tell us what you think. We do love hearing from you.
Email all your tributes to me at oppo@canadalandshow.com or tweet at us at oppocast. I'd also like to shout out the big guy himself, Justin Trudeau, who was too afraid to come on the show before I left. You know what? Total chicken.
Chicken shit. But it sounds like Chrystia Freeland is now our prime minister anyway, so fuck it. Chrystia Freeland, come on our show in January. You'll love it. Go like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like us, rate us and leave a review. We may even read them out on air. from Mitchell Fleming. Hey, byes. Hey, byes. As a young liberal Nova Newfoundlander studying at a left-leaning law school in Quebec, soon to work a job on Pay Street with friends and family working in the sands out west, I just wanted to say that your objectivity and sensibility provides well-needed assurance that there can exist meaningful and thoughtful political conversation as I wade through the polarized existence that is my academic and professional life. Yours, truly, truly, the Highlander. Thanks, Mitchell.
This episode was produced by Laura Howells and David Crosby. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton. The theme music was by Nathan Burley. And finally, I have the last word this week. And that word is goodbye.
It feels, Justin. I'm going to miss you. He's my brother.
Okay.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Listen up, true crime fans.
There's a big murder trial underway.
Dateline is launching a new podcast with Andrea Canning.
Welcome to Dateline True Crime Weekly.
We'll cover breaking crime news around the country with the best reporters on the case, NBC News analysts and Dateline producers on the ground.
Over. Break it down for us.
You'll just get behind-the-scenes scoops from crime scenes to courtrooms.
So tell us what he said.
Listen to Dateline True Crime Weekly now and catch new episodes every Thursday.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.